Welcome to Ever Beyond, Beyond. On Wolf Spirit Radio, No Borders Radio, and everbeyond.info. Be prepared to leave your belief systems behind as we go beyond teachers, beyond gurus, beyond duality, ever beyond, Welcome to Ever Beyond. It is the 24th of August 2014. You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio. You're listening to Ever Beyond Radio. You're listening to No Borders Radio. Welcome, everybody. Tonight, my guest might be you. You can call in. We got some new numbers. I tell you. Today has been a bit of a weird, it's always weird, days are always weird, they're getting weirder, but I mean, I woke up at 20 past 7 in the evening, having gone to bed about half past 10 in the morning. Anyway, so, I had a normal sleep, but I didn't wake up early. I'm one of those people, I cannot wake up early, you know, I sleep until I've finished sleeping and then I wake up, that's my thing. Otherwise I get headaches and grumpy. Anyway, I woke up with a headache anyway. So I pumped myself up with lots of aspirin, and I actually I think I had a Cocodamol as well. So I'd better not drink this whiskey here. I'll be fine. And soon the Cocodamol will, cut in and I'll be free from pain. And I'll be starting laughing and joking, but until that time, I'll stay kind of slightly grumpy. And anyway, we're here on air. We being myself and Nancy Hopkins, we have the new format now, which is I have a co-host, an assistant, associate producer, a co-host, sidekick, psychic sidekick, business partner. Long-time friend, trading. So, Nancy, how are you this afternoon?
I'm sorry that you're not feeling up to snuff, but hopefully the painkillers will kick in and we'll be okay. I'm doing just fine, thank you very much, and hi there out there in Radio Land.
So, one of the things we've been talking about over the last few days is these little devices that... I've been playing with and Walt from the Earthmind Think Tank Group. Now, you don't hear Walt much on Frank's shows, but he's down there, and he's making Orgonite, and he's just started including Shungite in his repertoire. I mean, he's quite a crystal master and metatronicist. We call this science metatronics. That is a form of electron flow that is beyond the electromagnetic spectrum, as Nancy calls it, subluminal life. We are talking superluminal technology, which doesn't require the same kind of plug, sockets, connectors as your regular EMF. So what we're able to do is construct devices that have qualities in them that don't require, for instance, batteries, because the energy comes from the crystals and stones from within the device itself. So the crystal becomes a power supply and a transformer at the same time. Nancy, did you see what Walt has been making? I sent you a couple of pictures. Did you see? What did you think of those things?
Well, you sent me one of the posts he made, and then I went over to his site, and there was a second post. He's done something else also. I think he got the Shungite from me, because I, you know, I said to you, who is this guy? You know, you sent me the book, who is this guy? And so then I started running him down, and I got really close. I was looking at the pictures, and I went, oh, I think that's my Shungite. And then I looked at his name, and I went, oh, I think there was a Walt, you know? So anyway, I contacted him. He called me today, but I was out, so I didn't get a chance to talk to him. I found it absolutely fascinating. I'm very excited that we've got somebody out there that, A, was listening to us, and, B, took some initiative to take it further into the realm that you just explained, Metatronics, because it's just exciting. And now the phone is ringing, so I'm going to answer that quickly.
Okay, you answer that, and I'll just explain to people what Metatronics is. We have we've come across the name Metatron before. Metatron is he appears in the film Dogma, and he's played by Alan Rickman in this case. And whenever you hear the sound of God's voice, that's Metatron. I am the Metatron. Anyway, so he was a very humorous version of Metatron. But anyway, Metatron deals with the interface between God and humanity, and the interface that we have I call them devices, you know, crystal devices, and they range from organite. They range from the plain crystal pendant, just having a crystal with a, you know, hole drilled in it with a bit of string, through to what I call the etheric weaver pendant, which is a device that my teacher showed me how to make. And basically what that is a crystal that is activated by two magnets either side. They basically provide a pressure. Magnets, crystals just require a pressure to start operating. And and then you have a coil around it. Now, some of you listeners have one of those, and you know, it's a really good pendant. It basically radiates your field around you. It's like a bubble of your own stuff, so that if anybody tries to impinge on that, they experience a kind of, it's like a resistance, like a fountain, because you're pushing out, they can't push in. Okay, so that's the etheric weaver pendants. And then the other things that are metatronic tools, we call them, things like pyramids that you can sit on, pyramids that you can sit under, also pyramids that you can sit on your head. The 9-inch size, it's 9 inches on the base, and you can sit that on your head. And let me just stick that on. It's a kind of Atlantean version of the tinfoil hat. What it means is that the point, you know, a pyramid is an octahedron. In reality, there's a pyramid above and a etheric pyramid below. And what happens is, when you put this on your head, your pineal gland is where the king's chamber ends up. Your crown center is where the apex is, and your throat center is where the etheric base is. So there's all these different places that this pyramid will activate as you put it on your head. And it's, strangely enough, it's 1/1000th the size of the Egyptian Great Pyramid, Giza. So it's a scale. And scale has a significance, you know, scale of 10, scale of 20, there's a natural forms. You know, the Mayan calendar, for instance, has these different scales of things that come in and go out. So when you have a pyramid on your head, you basically have a vortex that is buzzing around the inside of your head, right in the middle, where the pineal and pituitary bodies are, okay? And they help you focus to be the center of your mind, the center of your brain, where all these centers are, where Frank has spoken about. You know, you go back to the psychic center, the soul center, all these different centers. that are in the center of your brain, of course, because they're the centers. The pyramid helps you get there. So rather than being like excessively left-brained or excessively right-brained, it brings you to a state where your left brain and right brain are in not only in balance, but they're in communication. And that is the divine marriage. That's the divine tantra in oneself. Very much like what Michelle was talking about before, in, you know, when you meditate, that's what you're doing. You're focusing yourself in the middle of your center, in yourself, that is emanating from the center, rather than being on the periphery. Rather than being on the periphery of your life, you're dealing with it from the center outwards. So that's what these tools basically do. That's what all the things, you know, the headbands, Dale's headbands, if ever anybody was fortunate enough to receive one of these beautifully made headbands. He's not doing them anymore. I have one of the last ones here. And actually what I've done to his is I've got my crystal at the front, but I've also got pieces of shungite. I have one at either temple and one right in the middle that is in fact a little heart-shaped piece. It's very sweet. And that's just sitting above the crystal. So what I've found is that shungite and crystals work together in a left-right kind of fashion. And what I tend to do is that my shungite tool, so I made a shungite tool, I was telling you all about it last week, made a shungite tool of taking a piece of copper tubing and throwing lots of little pieces in there and kind of basically hammering the pieces in so they're really wedged in there tightly. And so it's almost like a continuous piece of shungite in a rod form. And then I have a little tuning coil that runs around the outside of that, and I can tune that in and just kind of tune that into where it feels good. The next thing that I feel to have is if I have that in my left hand, if I'm shoving that in my left hand, I have a crystal in my right hand, and that feels like cold and hot. The dark is the cold, the crystal is the hot. So, for instance, if you're making a rod, you would put a shungite at one end and a crystal at the other, or you may have crystals at both ends, or you may have shungite at both ends. Everything has a polarity. Hopefully we'll be able to get Walt on, we can talk about this polarity. So, Nancy, have you finished your call?
Yes, I did.
Good. Okay. So, where were you?
Okay, one thing that you said was about the putting the magnets on the side of the crystal, and you said that it responded to pressure, which is true, but it also responds to other energies. If it gets an electric charge into it, it will respond with the piezoelectric response. I think it's even more than equal to what that signal is. So we don't know if they also respond to energies that are outside the speed of light where we can measure them. And when we talk about orgone or orgonite energies, you're really talking about the space between everything. This is my interpretation of it, is that you've got all, they say that you can, that 10% of the universe is what we see. Everything else we can't see because it's beyond what we can measure in our senses. That ether, the stuff between everything, that's where the real power is. Nissim Harriman has been working on this for decades. That why are you looking at only 10% when there's really 90% that's probably where all the secrets are? And that's what is being drawn into the whole. Anytime you put any kind of crystals together, minerals together, you're attracting these extra energies to come flowing together. So every time you, and that's why there's so many different ways of using stones and minerals in healing environments, because every stone has a certain frequency. Everything in your body has a certain frequency. And so you need to be able to match the frequency that you need in a mineral form with what you're missing in your body because of toxins and electromagnetic pollution and all the other stuff, including hereditary diseases. So when you take that shungite and you put it into the mix, because, you know, Jay, last night after I saw what Walt had done, my mind was just like going like 1,000 miles a minute, and I kept seeing we're making devices in order to basically enhance the structure of the buckyball, the octahedron. What if we build a structure, an octahedron, and put the shungite inside of it?
Yeah. I did that. Probably one of the first things that I did with shungite. I have a little crystal device. It's a bit like a fairy one. I don't know why I did it, but I had these tiny little double terminated quartz, and I did my little etheric weaver thing with it. But instead of just leaving it the plain end, I used three loops of copper wire, arranged in, so it looks like a sphere. It's quite a, you know, basically three, just like three wires that are connected at 120 degrees or something, so that, 60 degrees, so that you've got this little copper cage, and, I suspended, you know, got a little, another piece of wire and twisted it up and around a piece of shungite. So I actually have, a wand with this kind of a spherical shungite sphere. Shungite sphere in the middle of it might be an interesting thing, hey?
That's the beauty of it. Once, you know, I really think the key to the science is imagination, because if the quantum physicists realized that anytime they made an experiment, they were in a situation where their very consciousness was affecting the experiment. Well, if that's true, that's proving that, you know, we do have control over our reality. If you can't imagine a new reality, you're never going to get there. So when we play with these mechanisms and we think about, well, what's it doing and how's it doing it? And, you know, I mean, it just opens up the, let's say, the game of reality creating. All of a sudden, it's like, you know, well, why is this doing this? It seems like magic to people that haven't been playing with it, but I say magic is only manipulation of energy.
You just can't see it. You just can't see how it's done. But, you know.
You can if you let your imagination go, and that's where I'm kind of saying, you know. It's like when I first started to, first off, this shungite, like I had, experiences with shungite doing things already. So then I started to look at, well, what is this stuff? And then I find the fullerene, the buckyball, the, you know, soccer ball shape, the octahedron, and I get into it, and I'm like, so now I've got an image in my head of what the molecule is, and I just kind of like focused on that image, and then the image just took off on me. It went like in animation, and it showed me all the energies that were inside of it that were being created by the geometry. Again, manipulating energy through geometry. And then when, not too long ago, it was a couple weeks now, I don't know, I lose track of time, David Martin sent a post to the shungite store that had an image of exactly what I had imagined, let's say, in quotes, in my mind was happening. But now he's showing me an image of it, and I'm going like, oh, my God. And then last week when on Journeys, when you were with Stuart Sulo, is that it? How do you pronounce
Stuart
his last
Swerdlow.
Name? Swerdlow. When he was on and he was talking about his ultimate protection symbol, I just started laughing because it's like a buckyball with a tetrahedron in the middle of it, and then you're inside the tetrahedron or whoever or whatever it is that you're trying to protect. I mean, it's like the synchronicity of the universe is telling us that this is the ultimate symbol. And where was I reading that thing? Was it somebody else on one of your shows that was talking about the, maybe it was him, about the Bible and the code in the Bible, and how it would give you geometric forms, and then when you, yes, it was him. And so you got these geometric forms because of another code in the Bible representing certain teachings, and then if you took all these forms and put them together, you'd have an octahedron. You remember him saying that?
Well, The teachings of geometric form are part of the teachings that my spiritual teacher taught me, and it was very, very important to. And that's what they, you know, if you read in these esoteric books, they say, you know, working with form. This is what they're talking about. They're talking about, and here's the thing. They're talking about pure forms, which means that it's, there's nothing off about it. So if it's the geodesic, it's equilateral. All the rods are the same length. Actually, that's not true with a geodesic, but certainly with an octahedron is all the same length, a regular octahedron, and all these regular, what are called polyhedrons, which is just the word for the, it's like a three-dimensional, a hedron is like an angle, but in another dimension. So a tetrahedron is a tetraangle, which is a square. But in three dimensions, it's a triangle form. But they're all the things are the same length, and that's what happens when you vibrate matter with frequency. Is you create forms in it. Now we've seen the two-dimensional forms. We call them chymoglyphs. We're probably going to need to have something like a chymahedron, just to create a complex word, you know, coin a complex word, but is a three-dimensional chymoglyph, which demonstrates what sound looks like in three dimensions. You could probably do it using vapor or something like that, or liquid, a magnetic liquid or a liquid that you could suspend inside another liquid that could then demonstrate the ball. But I imagine, say if you manage to suspend a kind of coloured oil inside a water, and then you had loudspeakers there that were playing frequencies at that water, that blob will then change form so that we could see it, so that we could see the three-dimensional aspect of that frequency. As I said, if you look up chymaglyph, chymaglyph, or chymatics, easier to find, chymatics, basically it's from the work of Hans Jenny, who made a plate and put a frequency through the plate and saw that it made different forms. And you can do it with a drum. If you've got best is a native Indian drum, nice and big. You cover it with powder, like talcum powder or corn flour or something like that, and then you put a loudspeaker underneath it. Or you can indeed go ho, and it will form a picture for you according to the notes. So ho 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 will create different notes, different forms on your thing, and you could sweep down and go ooh until the form was something that pleased you. Then you would have a notation for that frequency, and these frequencies are also built into the Rosslyn Chapel to create what's known as the Rosslyn Motet. That's in Edinburgh Way. Is a chapel that has this song that is encoded in chymoglyphs. That is actually built into the structure of the arches. Each of the arches has this little stone cube that is jutting out that has this form on the end of it. They took a lot of work to do that. Anyway, blah de blah. Are you back?
You know, I've been here. That's such a great description, and we've all seen it. We've seen the videos of sound and you know the ripple effects on water just by, you know, introducing the sound effects. But what people are missing, and what the Russians have not, the Soviets before them have not missed, is the concept of sound affecting your own genetic body, your own body. Your body is mostly water. So just as a water vessel, the fact that you're inside certain, being hit with certain sounds is going to affect your body. It has to. It's just a response to energy resonating or responding and vibrating like another energy. And that's what happens inside your body. But the Russians took it even further in the analysis of the DNA. And they realized that while the West talks about the 10% of DNA and they can break it down and they can find people because of their DNA and find genetic problems because of DNA, they only are dealing with 10% of it. The West called the rest of it, 90% of it, junk. Well, the Russians said, no, it's not junk. And they started looking at it, and what they discovered is that this 90% of the DNA at the cellular level is like a biological internet. And the vibration from one cell passes, causes the vibration in another one, and it's the resonance of vibration that actually is connecting all of this bioelectromagnetic electronic system. So what became most like, oh my goodness, is the fact that out of all the sounds and all the ways you can get sound, the sound that absolutely had the most effect on this system was the human voice. So when you look at the concept of sound and of music and of the human body as an energy electronic system, you just have to be in awe of the complexity and yet the basic simplicity of who and what we are. You know, there's this simplicity. It's based on energy. It's based on resonating energy. It's based on constructs of space and geometric form that will then twist and turn the energies that are within, that is 90% of the universe that, you know, again, the West doesn't want to think about, where those of us that go with our minds, that's where we play. You know, we say, well, why can't we take some of this 90% of the stuff that we believe is out there, and why can't we harness it for free energy devices? It's there. It's just that, again, it's the, you know, reality, cosmic reality, rule one, reality is what we think it is. Rule two, majority wins. But if you understand the first one, and you say, well, I'm not going to go along with that second one right now, I'm just going to stay in my own little loop, and I'm going to start creating with my own little imagination and see where it goes. Because, in essence, that's what I did with the Shungite. You know, it was like, oh, I think this stuff is really, oh, man, I think we could do this and that with it. And so I started to focus on it, to study it, to manipulate my reality around me, so at least the reality of my Shungite was magical. And then other people caught on. Oh, you know, I think you're right here. Well, yeah. So now you got more people putting their energy into the concept that, you know, this is possible. This is magic to others, but to us it's a science. So then you get people like Walt and you who can take those concepts, that belief system, and say, well, what if we did this? And it's all imagination. That's where the reality creating is in our imagination. If you hadn't imagined the wand, I call it your Shungite wand, if you hadn't imagined it, and it's not like I couldn't have done it. I didn't do it. You did it. You saw it. Let's try this, you know. But you built this thing, and so now it's out there. Now it's real. And all we have to do is get other people to either build them or get them from you, you know, and start playing with these things, because it's, I don't know that many of you, or maybe you did hear us last week, but between the end of my show and the beginning of Jay's show, he essentially built the Shungite wand he's talking about. And the coiling, the tuner he has is just a wire, it's just a spiral. But again, you're dealing with energies. Something that seems as simple as a 4-inch, half-inch pipe of copper that's got a coil on it that goes up and down and can change energy. Why isn't it, why don't you know about this? Because you don't think about these things. If you think about these things and you play with them, you go, oh my goodness, it is working. I don't know what it's doing, but it is working.
Exactly. And, I mean, what this, like I was saying, you know, I've crammed loads of pieces of Shungite into the rod. There's pressure in there, you know, it's stuck in there in you know, it's kind of, and so there is a potential that has been built up. And, you know, like you say, you know, it is a piece of wire, but you have to be aware that any piece of wire is an antenna. It depends on what the length of the piece of wire is to what frequencies it will resonate with. And so we have these various measurements that are used in the Orgon community, Orgonite community. We have these measurement terms that are ancient, that you read about in the Bible. We hear about the cubit, the royal cubit, the lost cubit. Heard about that?
I do, but go on about it, because yeah, it is a fascinating subject.
Okay, so basically, all right, so this comes from, like, radio transmitters. I was a CB fanatic in the day. But I wouldn't mind. No, I'm not a fanatic. I'm never fanatic about anything, but I do like to get into things. You know, I sort of delve into things. And so if I'm into something, I'll learn as much as I can about it. Anyway, so learning about radio and transmitting on radios, I discovered that in order to best transmit a frequency, you know, on CB it was 27 megahertz, okay? So you then do a bit of physics, right? And so I'm just going to throw a few numbers. Don't be scared of them. I'm just going to throw them out, and I'm going to throw them in, which is 27 megahertz, 27 million cycles a second, is the frequency of CB. And you have various channels, which are 27 megahertz minus 20 kilohertz, minus 50 kilohertz, minus 60 kilohertz. Those are the bands, the channels. And they was, say, you know, like your FM stations. You know, there's plenty of room in that wave band. That's what we call a wave band. It's a bunch of frequencies that range from something, but they center around 27 megahertz. So we call that the 27 megahertz band. That's what a band means in radio. And so when you have a frequency like 27 megahertz, that frequency is connected through a very common formula. Because the wave is traveling at the speed of light, then the length of the wave is a combination of the frequency, that's the number of times it's wibbling from 0 to minus 1 and minus 1 to 1, from minus 1 to 1 and back through 0. That wibble frequency, that's the F, and you take the wavelength, which is what we're trying to find, and by producing, you know, you combine the two, and so a particular length of antenna resonates with a particular frequency, or what we call wavelength. And wavelength is a word that we use synonymously with frequency, because sometimes it's more convenient to measure things in terms of in terms of wavelength than it is in terms of frequency. So in professional radio enthusiast terms, the 27 megahertz band is known as the 10 meter band. It's for the radio enthusiasts, they call it the 10 meter band. So what you're hearing them, they're talking about things in terms of wavelength. And what that means is that the wave is literally 10 meters long, and it's traveling along at the speed of light. Massive. And it whips up and down the wire 27 million times a second, blah, 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 and that wire then radiates into the surrounding atmosphere this frequency in a toroidal manner. That means that if you imagine a donut or bagel surrounding a pencil, the pencil is the aerial and the donut or bagel is the shape of the field around it. That's called a toroidal form. Oh man, too much physics today, I don't know. So when we
I love physics, because I know that it's, again, something that they kind of like instill in us to have this fear of this stuff, but it's fun. You know, it's like if you can understand the basics of what we're talking about. I mean, that's how I got lucky. I went into electronic warfare, and we had to learn about electricity and electronics and all this stuff. And I remember when I was in this class, I asked the professor, I said, he was talking about electromagnetic signals and how they're formed and blah, blah, blah. And I said, but what is it? And he said to me, what do you mean, what is it? And I said, what is it? And he went, blah, blah, blah. And I said, no, what is it? And we did this, went through this repetition quite a few times before he finally went to me, you mean, what is it? And I said, yes, what is it? And he said, oh, nobody knows.
Well, not nobody, but your physicists don't, because we're not taught the right words and the right concepts in order to place it into a universal continuum of things, you know. So, like, we got sound waves, and waves travel, you know, they're rippling through the sound. The air between me and the microphone is being turned into electricity because of the transmission of vibration through the air, turned into electric signals and then a digital signal and then squirted down. Anyway, so sound relies on air, but the problem is that the teacher of your physics teacher and the teachers of our physics teachers have long since dismissed the idea of the thing that they used to say that light waves travel in, and is still true, it's just that they've denied it for a while, is what we call the ether. Now the ether is like matter. It's very much finer grain matter, and it's like the same difference between solid and liquid to gaseous to fiery, and then it just goes on, and that goes on through the ethers, and that's what we call the densities and the dimensions. So radio waves are essentially traveling in the sea of the higher ethers, which are undetectable, though real, and constitute most of what we call the 90% of the rest of the universe that we can't see. How about that?
Exactly. That's exactly what it is. And, you know, so anybody who's trying to tell you what is and is not venturing outside of the 10%, they don't have a clue as to what is. You know, it's just, we got people whose minds can expand into the idea that, you know, there is this and everything between. I mean, think about it. Everything between me and the microphone is what? What is it? It's nothing? No, it's not nothing. It carries sound waves, just like you said, and a lot of other things. But if you can't imagine this invisible thing is actually, you know, being manipulated by my very voice, how can you understand, you know, the construct of the entire universe that is mostly constructed of nothing, in our opinion, because we're seeing it from the 3D below speed light. And it's all simple. It's not difficult. You just have to let your childhood mind come back and imagine it.
So, using imagination to determine how science works. That's really where Einstein started. And, you know, he was, because he was wondering about the speed of light, and you know, he went on a thought experiment. Anyway, let's not go there, because we are talking about things that are happening at the speed of light, which is the frequency of your radio waves, your light waves, and basically what I'm getting to is that, when you are transmitting on 27 megahertz, you're dealing with an aerial that is 10 meters long, or you're dealing with a wavelength that is 10 meters long, a wave that is 10 meters long. So when it starts, it goes up, and then it crosses down, and then comes back up again. And that distance, before it comes back up again and hits the zero line, that's what we call the wavelength. So if you take a piece of metal that is geometrically related to that wavelength, for instance, you could say, you could take a piece of metal that is half the wavelength. So 5 meters long will still work as an aerial because it's got the up and down bit. And in fact, what we've discovered is that you can take a piece of metal that is the quarter of the length of the wave, and have it sticking up from the ground, and use the ground as the other half of the wave. So what we used to use in CB was a quarter wave aerial. Now, as you imagine, 10 meters is quite a lot, but 2.5 meters, yeah, that's only about 6-7 feet. So that's quite handleable in terms of a piece of metal that you can stick up and hang on the back of your roof or even on your car. You know, 2.5 meters, 7-8 feet, you could have a nice long whip aerial. Now, the other thing that people did is they would load it with a coil. You put a coil at the bottom, and you could then take up half of the space again by putting a coil, which then simulates the rest of the wave kind of going up and down, kind of compressed like a zip file. And so when you end up with the standard DV-27 loaded aerial that would stick on the top of your car on a magnetic mount, you're only talking about a meter and a half or a meter and a quarter now. So what you see is that we've got, if you have a coil and a piece of wire, or even a piece of wire that then ends up in a coil, what you're talking about is an aerial that is specific to a frequency. So if I take a piece of wire that is a particular length, it will then tune in to a particular frequency. And that's where I'm getting to. Because if you have a piece of wire that is on a frequency that is, say, like one of these 432 or 528, you know, these not Fibonacci, what do they call them? Bill's hat talking about this. Solfeggio. One of these nice healing frequencies, and you have a piece of wire that is the appropriate length to pick up on that frequency, you wrap that round your coil, or you wrap that round your shungite, and your shungite will then resonate at that frequency. Boom! Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This is how to build Metatronic tools. If you could download this program and actually understand what I just said, you can build things and make things. That's all the information you need.
I actually think that it's more like the shungite, when you have a piece of shungite without anything on it, it's vibrating a specific frequency. When you take and you wrap a wire, again, and that's why we use raw wire, raw shungite, and I tell people, I said, it has to be a sacred mental state you're in, because you want to communicate with that rock to know how to make the circles, how to wrap this thing. Just work with it, because it's not like you've got a pipe. It's like you've got a structure that's got all sorts of different angles to it. So every single piece of shungite has a slightly different vibration. And when you add the wire to it, it's the shungite signal, okay, is being amplified. In other words, if you've done it right, you've matched the wire to the energy you're feeling. So you're actually intensifying the radiation field of the shungite. Now, I can tell you that when we took a piece of, I think it must have been at least a pound, well, probably 3/4 of a pound of shungite, and put it in a coil, you know, a quarter-inch copper piping coil, we could feel that field a mile away. Now, it could have been farther than that, but it was like we were a mile away when I said, I can still feel that field. And the friend of mine who was with me said, oh, my God, I can too. It's somehow not so much that it's being, you're changing the vibration of the shungite. It's that you're intensifying it. That's what I think. The way that I understood what you said was that you're tuning the shungite. I don't think that's what's happening. I think that you're sort of tuning what the energy is coming off of the shungite is. But if you've done it right, you're matching it with what's inside the shungite to begin with, which is slightly different depending on its configuration.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the resonance and frequency and so, you know, some more of the physics. So basically, if you take an electronic multimeter, your basic avometer, what we call an avometer, which is amps, volts, and ohms, or, you know, they call them flukes, the commercial ones is a fluke meter. It's, you know, it measures voltage and resistance and, you know, regular electrical things, normal things, really down-to-earth grounded electrical things. And if you put an ohm meter on a piece of shungite, as I did the other day, what happens? It's very interesting. You get a resistance. That means it's actually conductive to electricity. In a really direct way, you just put two pieces of wire onto this piece, on any piece of shungite, and it will have a resistance, and it will also have a different resistance if you reverse the polarity. That means that this is a diode material, the same way that silicon is. Silicon is arranged in just about every single item we keep talking about it. You know, your silicon crystal, your quartz crystal, is made of silicon, and if you hit it with a hammer, you get the piezoelectric effect, and you get a piece of energy out of it. And it also works if you do it more gently. And you can make a microphone because it will pick up sound waves and turn them into electricity. That's sensitive. So that's what the magnets and the pressure in the organite does. So when you're talking about a piece of shungite, you're dealing with the piezo effects, because it contains, I think there's a certain amount of silicon in it, and it'll, if you squeeze it, it will have a piezo effect. But it also has a diode effect. Now, if you have a diode and a coil and an antenna, what do you have,
hey,
Nancy?
Let me ask you a question. Can you explain diode for us, please?
Sorry. A diode is essentially, and I like to talk about electronic things in terms of water pipes, because plumbing and electronics is very, very, very similar. Because you can have little, I can illustrate it. So what a diode does is a valve, a one-way valve. So it will allow a current to pass through it in one direction, say from positive to negative. But if you turn it round, it will block it. It will present what's called a high resistance. It'll, you know, just like you, there's nothing. It's air. It's trying to push against the air. There's nothing there. So a semiconductor like silicon and germanium, this is what they used to make the crystal radio from. You have a crystal, you have a coil, you have a wire, and then what happens is that the wire resonates on a particular frequency, and the crystal will also resonate on that frequency, so it will be a feedback loop, and then the diode will kind of extract the audio that has been modulated onto that frequency. I should be able to explain it better, but basically, if you have two coils that are the same and they're separated, and you put a frequency through one, that frequency will appear through the other. And if you put a varying frequency, like audio, if you put it on one, it'll then appear at the other. And that's how radio works. That's what Marconi and Edison and all these people, Edison discover again? No. Marconi and Tesla certainly discovered that if you have two coils that are resonant, then they will vibrate, and you'd be able to hear them from miles away. And Tesla discovered that it's better to actually send that through the earth than through the air, as Marconi did. Marconi discovered that you have to use thousands of gigawatts to get across the world, yet you need a few milliwatts if you want to go through the earth, because the earth provides her own energy. Much as what this device is what we're talking about, because basically if you have a piece of shungite and you have a coil, the shungite not only creates the energy, but it also processes the energy and resonates at the appropriate frequencies. Like you're saying, each piece, because of its size and the way it reflects. So, for instance, if you're in a room and you go, oh, it may or may not resonate, and you may just talk and you'll hear another sound that comes bang. So there'll be a bunch of frequencies, and that depends on like the distance between the walls and how the way that sound reflects around the room. So if you have parallel walls, there'll be a specific frequency, because that's the way the sound is bouncing up and down and up and down and up and down, and will build up to a resonance. That's exactly what happens inside a laser. that you're doing the same with light, that it will bounce up and down, and when you get it just right, when you get to the sweet spot of the exact frequency of the length of the room, again, wavelength, when the ripples are bouncing back and forwards and they enforce each other rather than cancel themselves out, then what you've done is you've tuned the room. You found out what frequency that is. And again, that's exactly the same as the length of the piece of wire that I was talking about earlier. When you get the right length, you get the right frequency. So each piece of shungite, according to its size, because you know they're all random. Each and the parallels of the walls, and imagine you stood inside this cave, and the cave had an incredibly shiny surface, and you shine your light beam, and the beam will kind of bounce around, and it'll bounce at an odd angle onto another thing, and that'll bounce at another angle. And if it was infinitely shiny, you had an infinitely powerful laser, you would then see a lattice of light beams that were bouncing all over, you know, hitting different parts and bouncing off at different angles. And that's essentially what's going on inside the shungite. So if you imagine this happening at the speed of light, then you're going to be eventually set up what they call a standing wave, which will be a specific frequency that will be emitted from the shungite. How's that, Nancy?
Well, yes, and one of the first things that when I'm trying to teach somebody to do a pendant, I tell them, I say, look, there's an up and down to the shungite. You're going to feel it. You know, if you hold it up, you're going to feel one way, and if you hold it down, you're going to feel another way. And
what we call polarity.
Yes, and I had this little girl there, and she never missed. I mean, boom, 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 boom. She got it completely because her mind was out of it. I told her that this is what happens, and so she could immediately feel it. Whereas you tell an adult that, and then their mind starts screwing with the idea, up and down, what's it going to feel like? Where am I going to feel it, you know? Yes, but there is definitely an orientation with shungite. Every piece is different. And it's those grooves and the curves and you know, yeah, exactly like you described. It was a good description.
So what we're talking about here is that size and form determine frequency.
Yep.
So if you have, for instance, a sphere, and you were to shine your laser beam inside a sphere, and you can, yeah, I got these pocket lasers. I'd really recommend buy yourself a laser beam. It's just great fun, and the green laser, the brightest, and you can get them that they can really like almost tear. You know, you can shine it on a cloud. That's how strong they are. They're incredible. And you shine these into your crystals, and the crystals go, yeah, give me some more of that. And what you see is that the surface, the inner surface of the crystal, is shiny, and it will bounce off the inside more than it will kind of come through. So again, it will kind of bing bing bang bing bang bing 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 bounce off all the different walls, and then eventually it might just come in at exactly the right angle to pop out. So you'll see, and that's what we call a refraction. And because of different densities and different frequencies, if you have a piece that is like a triangle in a column, what's called a triangular prism, you shine your light through it, and it will split the different frequencies of light. And that's what we call a rainbow. And water can act as that as well. So we're talking about the same kind of process that's going on, and it's about the way light bounces around inside the mineral. So, all right, so what Walt Silver did, and I'd really love to have him talking about it. He's coming in from the next show with Frank Jordan, so hopefully he'll be online a little bit.
He's going to be on with Frank?
He usually is, so you know that's where I met him. So I hope he'll be able to come in at least for a little while in the next hour. Listen, I was going to take a break, and I was just going to, I randomly picked my oldies folder, and it comes up with Cliff Richard's Bachelor Boy, but I'm not going to play that. So let's see. Those of you in Britain will understand that irony rather strongly at the moment. This sounds good. How about some Nat King Cole, Nancy?
Go for it.
Yeah.
I'll see you in a bit.
So, welcome back to Ever Beyond.
Welcome
Stardust.
Back.
We are Stardust. This material. On a planetary scale, dust can be anything. Even up to the size of an aircraft carrier. Even bigger than an aircraft carrier. Dust. What's dust? This shungite deposit could be a piece of space dust. Hey.
Well, I think it carried the beginning of life with it. I think inside those big molecules, there was the stuff that was needed to start it all up. It's a feeling I have since I first met it.
Well, this is an interesting thing, you know. When a forester wishes to populate a forest, you know, you could get a guy out there with a little basket and a wheelbarrow and a spade, and he digs a hole and he, you know, sticks the spade in, you know, cuts across, digs, makes a hole, sticks the tree in, cuts the hole, and then goes on to the next one. Or you could have a whole bunch of seeds that were in a little rocket penetrated the ground, and it's made of a biodegradable material so that it penetrates the ground, plants the seed, and later on, you know, it's got all the nutrients that the seed needs to grow, and you can just drop 20,000 of those in an aeroplane, and they'll all land and create a perfectly natural forest, very much like if you took grass, your lawn grass, and just sprinkled it on the sand, on the ground. It will eventually, you know, eventually some of the birds will leave it alone, and eventually grass will start growing there. So, when you said this the first time, I had this imaginary thing of these kind of great big ET kind of creatures in these enormous ships that were just, you know, there was a planet, it was scooped by and chucked this thing down, and then scooped to the next planet, chuck that thing down, and da 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 da, and it would be done be done in a matter of minutes. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, yeah, because we've kind of gone into this before, but I love the image. I mean, yes, I can see these things, you know, so maybe they exist somewhere, at least in my reality. The thing that I think happens is that you develop layers of energy that become consciousness, even in a you know, because if you work, and this sounds really insane, but if you worked with minerals long enough, you'll hear people say, "The stone talked to me." You can actually communicate with some kind of a consciousness that's associated with a given mineral. And this is what I came through to from my own experiences. I saw things with stones that just didn't make any sense. Like, oh gosh, what was the name of it? It was, I think it was sphalerite. And it was this big crystal of sphalerite, which was, it's a beautiful multi-angled crystal, but you normally only find it in very small crystal size. And we had this one that was probably 3 inches long and about 2 inches wide. And it was sitting on the matrix being where it was found in the nature. They just carve out the whole stone. They don't just pull out the sphalerite. And underneath this sphalerite, it was sort of at an angle, and underneath this sphalerite, I started seeing or detecting that there were something was happening. There was now changes in the structure just underneath the crystal. And I said to my friend Sandy, I was laughing, I think this is a mother crystal and it's given birth. And she said, what are you talking about? And I said, look. So we looked at it and we kind of like, yeah, it looks like it, doesn't it, you know. But then weeks or months later, we kind of looked at it again. I said, Sandy, look at this thing. And now these crystals that had been just kind of indicated were now obviously crystals. And over the next few years, we watched crystals actually being formed and then moving outside of this crystal womb, we called it. And pretty soon the matrix was covered with this druzy, they call it druzy type crystals, small crystals. Now, that's impossible, but we witnessed it. Now, this was before anybody thought about YouTube and doing videos and all this stuff. I mean, and besides which, we sort of like were, I don't know what it happens in a metaphysical kind of an environment, but I've been a photographer since I was 10 years old, but when I've got these things happening, I don't think to pull out my cameras. I'm not sure why. Maybe I think I'm going to jinx it or something. We have seen crystals that grew in size, got bigger. And this has been documented by many people, that they're no longer in the environment where they should be growing, and yet they continue to grow. Where are they getting this energy? It's got to be the etheric energy that's around us, whether you want to call it orgone, organite, the source field. I mean, there's so many different ways the etheric was very well understood in ancient times. They talk about it quite a bit. So we can't underestimate what is happening with a given mineral. And when you work with them long enough, you feel like there's a consciousness attached to it. And somebody actually wrote a book called Guardians of the Gemstones. And they communicated with those consciousness, like the consciousness behind, ruby, emerald, they must have been, I bet 30 or more different gemstones that they actually did this and they wrote it down. And I found it very, very, very accurate. What they were saying to me just resonated that, yes, this feels like the stone, because I'd read the chapter while I had the stone in my hand. So I began to think in terms of, and plus the fact that I had so many animals, it was very obvious that the animals had a consciousness. It went way beyond what most people, unless you've lived with them, you don't see it. And if you see it, you'll never doubt it. But what happened was that I realized that behind everything, there seemed to be a consciousness that was just there. And we got hit with Andrew, the Hurricane Andrew down here in South Florida, there was so much devastation. There were so many trees that were destroyed. And in my yard, I had a lot of trees down and damaged, but this big old mango tree that I used to think of as the mother tree, and I was, you know, it just was, had just the essence of power in it. And I would go and meditate with it a lot of times. And it was very damaged. And I went over to it, and I was really fearful that it wasn't going to make it. And I sort of tried to communicate with it, you know, like, because it's a devastation when you feel not just what happened to the animals or the people, but what happened to the vegetation and the birds and, you know, all these other things. If you're an empath on that level, it can be very, very sad. And I was sad, and I'm talking to the tree, and, you know, I was lamenting all of these deaths and everything, and I started walking away, and I had to have been 10 feet away before I hear, "It's okay." And I went, "Is that the tree?" And the tree said, "Takes us a long time to talk." And it was very slow, you know. And so then I went back, and the tree explained to me very slowly that when all these other trees had been damaged and destroyed, their energy went in to the trees that were standing and empowered those trees with much more energy. And the mother tree told me, she said, "I'm going to be fine. I'm going to be stronger than I was before." And she is. So that was an introduction to, oh my gosh, there's a there's a consciousness attached to individual trees even. And I had long before that felt that if we're made in God's image, certainly we don't look like God. I mean, I don't think God looks like me or you or, you know. But if we're made in God's image, what is it that God has the capacity to do that no human does, or we think? And that's to create, and to create souls. And I became aware of the fact that when I would take in an animal and I would love that animal would begin a response pattern that essentially opened up and unleashed a personality, a soul in the animal.
Yes, so yes.
You know,
I have to say that a few weeks ago, I experienced exactly this. And it was a farm animal that had attached itself to a person that I knew. That farm animal had been basically left for dead. And this friend of mine was kind of, you know, just trying to trying to talk to this poor creature that she saw. She kind of just spent a few minutes with it, kind of staring into his eyes and things like that. After she'd visited, I felt this presence around, and I thought, you know, what's going on? Because I've been starting to see things, and I get these little creatures in my house. Anyway, so it turns out, you know, I'm using my dowsing. I'm saying, okay, I've got someone with me. Yes. Is it a human? No. Is it an animal? Yes. Is it a wild animal? No. Is it a domesticated animal? Yes, sort of. Is it a farm animal? And is it yes? And is it a cow? No. Sheep? No. Pig? Yeah. And I had this little conversation with it, and it was basically saying, you know, tell her thank you, and it went off into the light to go into the evolutionary spiral. So that's all it takes. It just takes a little bit of time and attention with an animal to create a soul from your spirit interacting with its beings.
Absolutely. I've got goose pimples because I just, that was such a, I mean, because it does not have to be a long-term environment. I can remember doing the same thing with a bee, you know, a dying bee. And it is so metaphysical, you know, when you're connecting at that level, that it, you know, that there's so much more to existence. And it's those little things that really teach us. But it didn't take much to go from understanding the concept of if we love, if we acknowledge, we create, and we create souls that go on and continue. I was in a metaphysical, there was a very, one of the most powerful, well, very much one of the most powerful psychics I've ever known. She never ceased to amaze me. And she was doing a meditation. And I ended up with this person in front of me. And it wasn't really a person. It wasn't like a human person. It was an entity, let's say. And the entity said to me, I was Jay. And Jay was a cat that kept coming back. He kept reincarnating. And we always knew it was Jay because how many cats love water? I mean, this cat would jump in water. If you were watering the plants, he'd come over and you could hose him down completely. And, you know, he kept coming back. And he said, and I knew the last time he left, he wasn't coming back. I just had this feeling. And he said, you loved me and you created what I have become. You know, I don't know exactly what that is, but it was like very real because you know how some of these metaphysical things are more real than, you know, what other people think is real. And that's when I became, it was confirmed what I had begun to believe. But that, if I ever doubted, I think about that image, you know, because it was, and there were other people with him, but he was like the spokesman.
It's because we give them names.
Yeah.
We give them names. An identity symbol, frequency, name, form.
Yeah.
And then the name carries energy with it, of all the other things that have been named that.
Exactly.
And creates a behavior with, yeah. Give a dog a bad name.
And exactly what you're referencing is, like, that's why I think that what happens with when we acknowledge Gaia as being a conscious entity, that we are actually imbuing her with much more power, much more spirit, her soul, if you will. So if a human being can come to the understanding that they are created in the image of God, in that your acknowledgement is so powerful, your energy field, your thought forms, your everything that you are is so powerful, can actually create souls and infuse an existing consciousness with a higher consciousness. I mean, you know, when you live with a dog long enough, they begin to read your mind, or in my case, the guy from the minute he got here was reading my mind. And you know, the cats that show up when you need somebody just to hug, it expands the lovingness of the universe when you feel those connections, and you feel that in some way you are responsible for it because you simply took the time to love and acknowledge.
Totally. And you know, this has so many implications, because what we're talking about is the process of creation and the process of co-creation. This is really what it's about, is that when you focus your love on a creature, you give that creature soul. You're being what God does. You're doing what, you know, this is the job that God does. So this is, in a way, this is how we become gods consciously. Now we know, now everybody who's listened to that knows that when you talk to an animal, they're not only listening, they're not only learning, they're becoming like you. You're sharing your consciousness. Whatever level of consciousness you've reached, you can give to those creatures in the same way you give to your children. We give them, by loving them, we give them our level of consciousness. As far as we've got here, this is as far as we've got. Here's the file, now go and do your research. That's the kind of way we work.
Yes, yes. This is a very profound show we're having here.
Telling me. This is how creation works.
You know. Exactly. It's a great alternative Sunday, schedule. Because when you see what happens in the churches, let's just take it the other way. You see what happens in the churches, and they dictate what you should be imagining. And they make constructs on what you're imagining. And they take all your power away from you. Yeah, I remember going to catechism class and saying, well, what's faith? You know? And it's like, well, it's faith. You just believe. Well, why would I just believe? You know, because you have to have faith. And so
recursion. See recursion.
Yeah. It's no way to nurture creation and to honor God. They want to put constructs on God. I do not. I cannot imagine that I'm powerful enough to put constructs on God. You know, the God force, whatever started this whole thing, we are part of it. We are its creation. Just as God says, well, I think I'm going to make a Nancy and a Jay. That'd be fun. They'll be of a certain frequency, and they'll be drawn through all the cosmic craziness that's out there. They're going to be drawn together so that at some point in time, these two are going to move mountains, just because that energy that combines is something that is creative in nature. You know, I mean, does God do that for every single essence of what is? Maybe. I'm not underestimating God. I won't say, no, God couldn't possibly do that. Now, could also God say, well, I don't know. I'm kind of bored. Let's just throw these creations out there, and I'll sit back and see what happens. You know, maybe that's the way God operates. I don't know. I know that there is a source God. There has to be. It doesn't make any sense. Nothing happens if you don't have consciousness. You know, I think it's rule 14 of cosmic reality. You can't have creation or manifestation without consciousness. So there's consciousness, it's energy. And that's what we have. We have the essence of God in us. If we understand that, and when that's the something's happening. That's the essence of reality changing in creation. Is, yes, we are in the essence of God, but not that we look like God. We're in the essence, not the image. The image, the essence, we have the ability to acknowledge, to imagine that my dog is not crazy and just running around barking, to imagine that that dog has got a sense of what is happening and he's out there and he's just checking it out. To know that that animal has a rationalization that allows him to process information. Now, does he have it or do I believe he has it? Well, it doesn't matter in my reality. I believe he has it, so he has it. I feel bad for people who do not allow their imagination to guide their lives. If you can't imagine it, it's not going to happen. And if you can imagine it, and you set yourself up for that creation, it'll happen. It's a matter of asking the universe to... It's sort of like, and I told you this, guys, before, is that when you want to manifest something, imagine it as a future tense. It's happened. Don't think of how it's going to happen. Just think of it as it's happened. And if you do that, and you pose a question to the universe, how is it that Wolf Spirit Radio survived Dave Corso and became one of the most influential, progressive, solution-based vehicles? How is it that that happened? And when you do that, the universe does everything it can to make it happen. And I say this because I have seen it time and time again in my own life. Put it in the future, lock it in, and then sit back and watch it happen.
That's right. In way, and indeed, what you've just done is you've created that potential in the future just by saying, how did Wolf Spirit become so popular? How did Wolf Spirit become so influential? How did Wolf Spirit become so much a channel for the truth that nobody could deny? Nobody could.
Exactly.
How did that happen? And what that does is everybody who's now listening to this is now thinking, oh, I wonder how that would happen. And that adds to the realm of probability that this actually already has happened.
Exactly.
And so now, probability becomes possibility. And then the more we think it should be, the more it becomes, as you say.
Yes, that's absolutely true. But one person can do this. I mean, it doesn't require multiple majority rule at any time when you're doing this. You can do it for yourself, you know, like one point after another. If you just realize that, or let's turn it around. What if I had said, Wolf Spirit is going to be, okay? As soon as you say Wolf Spirit's going to be, the impulse of the universe, our universe, because of the matrix, is that all of a sudden people are saying, or the universe is saying, maybe not. No. So you have to just assume that it is a fact and put it in the future, and then everybody goes, well, how would you do that? It's a mind trick. But the mind trick works with the universe too. And never get into the details, because if you try to do the details, you're limiting the creativity. You'll lose the magic.
That's right, because the bubble, it's like you're creating a bubble of potential reality. Just like if you were to sit in front of a group of children and say, once upon a time, imagine there was a fairy. And imagine what you've done, you've just hypnotized everybody. It's like, it is a hypnotic process, but it's a benign hypnosis. It is the trance of magical thinking, which the powers that be are always trying to create as a a fallacy, just a fantasy, just like nothing that can in fact be real, when in fact it's more real than anything. How many people here have had deja vus? How many people here have had a deja vu of today? You know, how many deja vus have you had today? That's how we this is how we measure the shift, really.
Well, they kill the imagination of children. Absolutely kill it. It's designed into the system to make them, learn by memory. They don't say to them, if you want to read this book, you learn this code. It's called writing. You know, they say, okay, you got to memorize these words, and then it's going to make these sentences, and you're going to, you know. One time when I was in phys ed, I was taking phys ed at college, and we had a situation where we had a bunch of kids. We were doing something with kids, and the teacher, the instructor there, said, I want to show you something. This is very interesting. And they were young kids. I mean, they were probably first graders. I think they were first graders. And she said, okay, I want you to put your feet over your head. And what happened was that there was some duplication, but there were so many varieties of putting your feet over your head that none of us would have really considered all the ways that these kids put their feet over their head. You know, and to the point that some of them were doing physical things that they really shouldn't have been doing. But I remember this one girl just started doing cartwheels. And I said, have you ever done a cartwheel before? And she said, what's that, what you call it? And another one just started doing this rolling around. He just kept rolling, and his feet, of course, would go, you know, and it was like, wow, you know, if you'd asked an adult, they'd all have laid down and put their feet up, you know, I mean. So the children are completely controlled by the education system. I was a substitute teacher in an English department in my high school, where I actually had gone to school. I went back and I was a substitute teacher. And it was the head of the English department. And I was taking her class, and she was doing some kind of poetry thing, you know. And when I told the kids, I said, you can never determine what was in the mind of the author. That's impossible. How can you do that? I said, all you can do is use the words to tell someone what you got out of the writing. And, don't ever let anybody tell you, this was my mistake, don't ever let anybody tell you what an author means. So sure enough, the teacher comes back and she says, what does so-and-so mean by, and they all said, oh, Miss Hopkins says that we don't have to answer that because we don't know. Never had another substituting job in the English department. Because, why? I was telling kids free think. You know? And no, that doesn't work. And it's not that the teachers are, you know, there's some conspiracy for the teachers to react that way. It's just the way that it's all inbred. I had a guy who was a head of the education department at the University of Massachusetts, and he was brand new. He cost us a lot of money to get him. He was very extremely well known, and he was giving a talk to some of us. And he said to us, he said, what's education all about? What's the purpose of education? And of course, we all sat there pretty dumbfounded. And he said, the purpose is to make good citizens. That's the only purpose. He said, when I was teaching high school, I had this kid, and if somebody asked me, is he a good citizen, I would have said yes, and I would have known that I did my job. And 2 years after he graduated, he shot and killed a police officer. He said, that's when I started re-evaluating education and what we were doing. And he was a very progressive man. So even the teachers understand that their job is to make these children not learn, but learn what to do so that society can continue in the matrix. God forbid they should be free thinkers.
That's right. So we got the Well, we've had so many subjects running through this, but I mean, I was talking again about health in my show with Katie earlier. The reason that people have got cancer is because they're trying to take things that they're thinking will make them more healthy, whereas they're poisoning themselves, and they're trying to cure themselves from the poison by adding more poisons to try and offset the poisons and end up, you know, poisoned. And the way I advocate health is, you know, stop poisoning yourself and you'll get better. And it often works miracles. And that poison can be physical, as in food, or it could be electromagnetic or geopathic or things like that. You know, different things affect different parts.
No, I was with my friend, a vet who's in the, he's supposedly terminal. And he had gotten some kind of a cancer, and they gave him the chemotherapy. And now he's got something that they can't even figure. They're getting cancer readings, but they don't know what the hell is happening. And he and I got into a conversation about, they might have cured the cancer you had, but in doing so, they probably killed your liver. So the death certificate is going to say you died of liver poisoning, not that you died of the chemotherapy that killed your liver. You know, and yet at the same time, I've had a sister and a brother with cancer that were cured with traditional cancer, I mean, chemotherapy, radiation type of thing. So it's very difficult to know what to advise anybody of. So I don't get into it. I make the decision that, you know, you're going to die some way, and I certainly am not going to poison the good part of my body because I got a problem someplace else. I just can't imagine doing it. To me, it would be like suicide. But it's one of those things you just can't, you know, advise somebody, because their mindset, too, is so important in it.
Well, we're talking earlier about the suicide programming is a reality, and it's one of the methods that the powers that be have been trying to kill us with, is by making us kill ourselves. When we have managed it, they're then trying to spray us and kill us and stuff like that, just in order to keep Bill Gates in I don't know why he wants to kill everybody. He won't earn any more money. Maybe we've all seen through him and he's had enough. So, removing toxicity is one of the things that this... So, let's just come back to our physics situation. And we're talking about the way that buckyballs absorb energy. Like, you can say scientists have found that inside this molecule they can put another molecule. It's like a little vacuum cleaner. It kind of sucks elements in from outside, that you can deliver, you can use it as a delivery system. So you're saying that also these potential ancient creators supplied inside the fullerene were the seeds of life itself.
Yes, I absolutely believe that. And, you know, not only molecules, but gases. They can put gases inside of the buckyball. And gosh only knows what else they might have already put in there. But, yeah, because it's such a bizarre thing. First off, the fullerene should not exist on Earth. It should only exist in the vacuum of space. And they can't get any geological rationalization why this stuff exists. It only exists in this 1,000-kilometer area. And it's lying on top of the Earth. And they don't even know the age of it. But most of the time they say, well, it could be 2 billion years, it could be 4 billion years. Well, if you're talking 2 billion years, you're still talking about a planet that is basically in its molten stage. It's starting to harden. But there is no life. It's a molten state. And so, you know, like your rocket people, you know, boom, you know, here you go. It probably carried all of the enzymes and whatever it is that created the first microorganisms. But it also might have carried an energy form that took a molten ball of stuff and imbued it with the first frequency of energy at the conscious level. Because again, we can't underestimate what is possible within the source God's capability, but also, you know, the ETs. I mean, obviously we're extraterrestrial. I mean, where did the stuff to come from? You can't make life out of nothing. It had to have come from something. If you got a molten pot of metals sitting there cooking, I can guarantee you could look there for eternity and you're not going to see life just start bubbling to the top of this stuff.
I've got it. It's a stock cube for primordial soup.
Probably. That's kind of the way I think of it. So that it sits there and initially it was probably just a vibration.
Tells me, you know,
and so the vibration begins, you know, and that starts breaking down certain things that have the enzymes and whatever it takes to create life, because it doesn't take very much. And another thing very interesting about the origin of life that I find fascinating is that in the Bible they talk about, you know, God reaching for some mud and creating the rib of Adam or whatever it is. But everybody, you know, scientifically, you see this primordial soup where there's all this mud and all this mineral life and energy that's cooking this stuff up. Well, the predominant mineral at that time was silicon dioxide or quartz. And silicon dioxide, the molecular structure of it, is in the same configuration geometrically as DNA. So if you assume that you have to have a particle, which my understanding of the early science in scientific terms is, when you've got a particle, then the stuff sort of gets attracted to it. Like, why do you end up with snow coming down? Because little particles attract the water, and then the water freezes. But you have to have a dust. We started out talking about dust. You have to have a piece of dust. And in the case of the early primordial soup mixture, I think the dust was actually silicon dioxide or quartz, which was carrying the DNA strand. So they kind of, like, configured around this thing and picked up the same, like a coiling system, and they picked up the same geometric shape as the quartz itself. The linkages to life and quartz and minerals and all of this stuff is astounding if you really get down and look at it from that standpoint. So we're underestimating the power of the mineral kingdom, is what I'm saying.
Indeed, as we were talking about animals and vegetables, that actually, we're going right through the kingdoms tonight. It's all laying out. It's like, you know, we really co-wrote this show already from the future, then dropped it back in the past, so that we're just playing it out now. We didn't think we were, but there we go. It does feel like it's already been scripted.
I love you because you get it. You get the full impact of the scenario that happens. You know, you create the reality, and then you start to be manipulated in everything you do and think, and, you know, to become that reality.
Yeah. That's what the force is. This is an example of the force, or going with the flow and seeing where it goes. So here we are. So now we're talking about putting our consciousness into the elemental kingdom. These are the you know, we're talking before about crystals, but we're talking about how animals, if we put our attention into them, they develop souls. And then we talked about vegetables and how the trees and their spirits evolve when disasters happen, and how our attention to them will create evolution in them. And now we're talking about crystals and silicon. Then we talked about crystals and how we communicate with the consciousness of those. And we're going to be talking probably later with Kimmery and the crystal skull, which is a very defined consciousness. And then we're now talking about the elements themselves, the elemental consciousnesses. And one of the things that we're surrounding ourselves with at the moment is the very comforting elemental consciousness that is the carbon 60 atom and the community of carbon atoms, which we now know as shungite, which we're talking about as the stock cube of the primordial soup. I do like that. No shift, Sherlock. Yes.
Yeah, and it's all really layers of consciousness and like the mother tree, because I asked the questions and the tree responded over the decades, I go out there every morning and I hug the tree and, I have a communication with it. People who are at all opened up, they all end up at that tree. They're all drawn to that tree. I've had them say to me, is this the mother tree? And I've never used the term with them, but that's her. But they're all drawn to it. So if you just watch what happens to people where they don't know what you know, it just confirms that, yes, this is real. So when we're seeing all of this consciousness within the 3D world that's operating below the speed of light, let's take it the next step. Is there fairies? Are there guardians of the underworld? Are there archangels? Are there beings who have evolved and watchers that are sentient beings that take the form of animals in order to assist humankind? I mean, we can't limit that possibility either. And if you allow that conceptually to be an okay thing to think about, you begin to see and to feel and to know. And once you begin to go into that state, you are basically, again, using your own creativity to imbue them with more power so that they can more easily influence at the below speed lights. And once you go there, and that's why, people say, are you crazy? You think about angels? And I say, no. No, it's not craziness. It's accepting the no limitation on God. Everybody else wants to limit God with their churches and their, you do it this way and you do it that way. And I'm saying, no, why would you limit God? God can do anything. God can create creatures. Think of just what's on the face of the earth, the variety of versions of life. Then take it out into the cosmos and think of what's out there. Why would you tell God that you couldn't possibly have an elf or a fairy or a guardian of the underground or archangels or guardian angels? Why would you assume that you have the right to limit God? And then once you start playing in those realms, you could be judged crazy by other people, but those other people are missing out on an extraordinary reality. And I know that there's people out there that say, well, I was talking to somebody just last night, and the car had broken down. It was doing the radiator thing. They knew they had to open up the hood. And so she goes to open up the hood, and so her partner was in the car, and she goes around to get, popping the hood. And she goes around to get in front of the car to open up the hood, and she said, she felt a hand on her chest, and she said, Nancy, I couldn't move. The hand kept pushing me back. And she said, I got so confused. And she said, and that's when another car hit us. And had she been in front of the car, she would have probably been killed. But no, a hand reached out and pushed her out of the way. One time when I was in college, I was walking across the street and I was daydreaming. Cause I'm always writing stories in my head. So I'm just walking, I'm doing this, and all of a sudden I felt a hand grab me from grab my shirt and pulled me back so violently that I fell back on my back, and the car that I was walking in front of me just missed me. So if and other stories about somebody, a friend of mine who was, just driving, and all of a sudden, be careful, here's the voice, be careful. And so she slows down. And had she been going the same speed, she would have been in an automobile accident. How many of us have had this kind of inkling like, oh, what's wrong? And you slow down because you don't know what's wrong, and you find out that, you know, that might have saved your life. We have guardians. And if you accept that you have guardians with you, and you allow them to do their job and don't fight them, they will assist you in having just a joyful life. Because one thing I know about them, I mean, you know, you've got guides that talk to you, that tell you, that give you an idea. I'm sure Walt does, you know, that he hears something and his mind starts going, and then he starts getting pictures probably. And, you know, is he doing that, or is he being assisted by either your higher self or guardian angels or guides or spiritual evolved beings? We don't know what they are yet. We're not evolved enough to understand all of these things. But don't limit God. Don't say they can't exist. Because if you agree that they might exist, and then you say, what the hell, what's my imagination, we'll just play that they are existing, then you feed them more energy to have more impact on your life. And I mean, when you see a kid that's saying, can't you see the fairies? There's one there and one there and one there. Am I supposed to say I don't see them? I say, oh yeah. Now, my mind is old enough and been controlled enough that no, I cannot see the fairies, but I can sense them. But I know that child can see them. So yeah, we have to just to give ourselves the permission to go crazy by what is normal, because normal is nuts.
Permission normal to go is crazy, a sir.
You know, join the crazy side of existence, please. It's much, much more gratifying.
Just this side of the line, just the crazy side of the line. Well, I mean, well, so from elemental to consciousness itself, what we're here to do is to give consciousness to the earth and nature. And grounding ourselves is like we're downloading our experiencing to the conscious mind of the planet, because she's just waking up and we're helping her wake up. And using these tools, using crystals, even using pieces of wire that are coiled around, they're a particular length. Just, I mean, if like, I mean, Nancy's saying, you know, you get yourself into a sacred space, and you could grab yourself a pair of cutters, grab a length of wire, clip the wire at just where you feel it's right, and it will be right, because that wire will be resonating with your frequency, and you'll know exactly how long it should be and how tight you need to coil it and all of those other things. Manifest your sacred state of mind, and you can always pull it apart and start again. That's the lovely thing about these things. You can dismantle the arrays and build a new one. They're very modular, and once you understand, like that kid, right? I just subscribed to me on Facebook, the little kid who did the crystal matrix.
Adam
is his name or something? No, what's
Adam?
Adam, that's right.
Adam.
So tell us about Adam. Have you been in contact with him? We should have him on the show.
I would love to have him on the show, because somebody posted on the Shungite store Facebook group a picture of him with a piece of Shungite on his forehead. And it was just, you could see the light coming off of him. You know, what he's done, I don't know if you know that he's actually solicited getting minerals from different, and he's very specific as to where he wants the mineral. You know, I want a stone from blah, blah, blah. I mean, location, city, that type of thing, in order to have a piece
build the
from
crystal matrix.
Yes, to have a piece from.
Holy Lord, there he goes. He's doing it. He's the one.
He is the one.
Adam.
And so he's
Adam, for God's sake.
We can contact him. It would be awesome to talk to him, especially you and me, because, you know, we're child childs at heart, because we've got great imaginations. And, you know, they just, I just love, I mean, I tell people, I said, if you want the truth, talk to a child. Because they know it. It's right there. It hasn't been beaten out of them yet. But no, Adam there was another kid. It was not Adam. It was another kid. I'd say probably 3 years ago, maybe. Yeah, about 3 years ago, who did the same thing with the grid system that started Adam out in people's minds. But Adam came along, and he's like, he sees the energy. Now, see, what people may or may not know is that the actual DNA structure, the two strands, there's a whole bunch of places on the DNA that looks like it should be coupled to something else. And so that's where they get the concept of, well, this junk DNA, because there's nothing there. It's not doing anything. Well, it's not doing anything because the DNA that should be in the human essence is 12 strands, not two. So what is happening is that every time we travel through this particular area of the universe, the energies that are here, like shungite maybe in the beginning, but it's new life, it's new energy. And so the DNA in the humans and the animals, the first place that I know of that they saw changes in the DNA was within the great apes. And right after I heard that, I read a report about it, there was a video about this, they were actually videotaping an area where there was the great ape was, you know, frequenting. It was like a park area. And this guy, all of a sudden, is looking at this silverback with his family. And there was like five, six. There was three kids, I think, and two, and the mom and the dad. And they're walking towards him. And he just is filming this thing, but he's also stationary. Now, his buddy started filming him, filming this group of great apes coming to him. And it was the most astounding thing, because I became I used to go down to the zoo a lot and hang out with the apes. I found them fascinating. I'd watch them for hours. And so I know what I should be seeing, and I was seeing something so much more profound in depth and consciousness. And they went up behind him, and then they stopped, and they all sat down right behind him. And, of course, his buddy's filming him, and the face the guy is making, he's like, can you believe this? You know, but he doesn't dare turn around. So he's sitting there, and one of the little kids come up and started to touch him and pull at his hair a little bit. And, you know, as a kid does, he started getting rougher and rougher. And the silverback didn't touch the kid. He gave him a motion to stop. And the kid immediately stopped. And they sat there for, I don't know, maybe another minute and a half. And then they got up and they moved on. And it was such an example of absolute stunning consciousness evolution in my mind. Because, like I say, I had a basis for understanding what it should be. And to see the depth of, whew, it was amazing. So that was the first time I heard about the DNA actually changing. But then I got young people around me that had kids who obviously were much more alert and conscious. And you see him now you see him in pictures. You'll see on Good Morning America, it's Hoda and Kathy Lee. They once a week they show pictures of babies. And whereas before I would see this special light that they had in their eyes that would indicate this is one of these kids that has their DNA already restructured. Now, it may not all go to 12. It may only go to 6, but there's definitely more strands of DNA showing up in people. And what's happening is that the doctors, not knowing this, are misdiagnosing these children because they're basing it on a false database. They're basing it on what was, not what is. So you'll have kids that are called autistic. They're not autistic. They're just not talking. They have no need to talk to you. They're superior to you. You have kids that are being diagnosed with all sorts of bizarre diseases because their DNA is skewing what they're seeing. So we're going through changes, and I can guarantee you that, you know, in a very short period of time, humanity is not going to be the same structure in any way, shape, or form, because the next generation is going to have completely evolved within this new energy field that's going to make changes. Now, the key is, can we realize this? Do we realize this? Do we work with it? Well, yes, obviously, because there's people like you and I and so many others out there who are understanding the full implications of what was meant when they talked about ascension and enlightenment. It's at every single level. It's not just the human being. It starts with, you know, the beginning of the very structure of life, and it goes all the way through to Gaia, the entity that is the consciousness of this entire biosphere. And all we have to do is feed that entity. I mean, Luma, I'm telling you, I'm going to bet on a guy is going to make, you know, the black forces, the black nobles, the evil that is, wish they'd never been born, because they're screwing around. I almost said the F word. They're screwing around with an entity that is growing in power every single day. And, you know, I'm not worried about the planet ending. Humanity might go away, but not the planet. She is extraordinarily powerful. So get your imaginations going. Understand that magic is just manipulation of energy. There is consciousness at every level. Look for it. Expand your horizons. Expand your own imaginations to accept the fact that you are never alone. You have always got guides with you. You've got your higher self to begin with, but more importantly, you've got angelic beings that are there for those people that ask them to be. If you don't get permission to them to assist you, well, they're not going to bother with you. If you say, look, I believe you're there, and I want you to assist me because I need to finish my mission, and my mission is to imbue Gaia with more and more power. You know, getting Shungite to the masses is what my mission is, but what that entails is it makes everybody that has Shungite connect to nature in a way, in a frequency, in an energy level that they can't stop. Once you get into it, you're not going to be able to stop it. You know, you can walk away from it, but I guarantee you, you'll come back. Because it's the only way to go. If somebody can tell me there's another solution for the problems that we have that will allow everybody to essentially, you know, exist intact, please tell me. But I'm telling you that Shungite in itself is a mineral that is linked intricately to the beginning of life, to the beginning of the consciousness we call Gaia. And why do I use the word Gaia? Because it's a power word. We were talking about how sound affects DNA. Gaia is a power word. They don't want you to say it. So Gaia, Gaia, Gaia. You know, say it, say it, say it. Because it will build not only them, but it will build your DNA to be able to resonate with that energy field. You know, that's really interesting. I had never thought about that.
You know, I was talking again earlier about perigee, apogee, these astronomical terms for the you know, when the moon is close. We're on a super moon, and we're on the new moon, but it's still quite close to us. It's at its perigee, and the words that involve G, you know, and we even use it. Yeah, G. Yeah. And there's the Freemasons, and they have this G in the middle of the compass and square, and you know. There's this G thing that is like, it's not G for God, it's G for Gaia. And I think that's the big mystery. There we go. More solutions.
Jay, I think you just stumbled on something that is absolutely probably one of the best kept secrets, and I'd never heard it before, but as you said it, I went, oh my God, how did I miss that? Or, oh my Gaia, how did I miss that?
G is us.
Yep.
Jesus.
Yep.
Damn, damn, damn. It's the power of the word. Because Jesus wasn't called Jesus, he was called Isa. the Book of Esau.
And Emmanuel and the Lion of Hope.
Yeah, Emmanuel. That's a. I don't know where that word Iman. Iman, El. Right, the Imam of El. El, the goddess. The Imam is an Arabic term because they have the Imam Mahdi, who is their version of G, is us. So it's a very interesting thing that all these words come down to us and people take claim on them. That's the thing. People take claim on words like Melchizedek and things like that. You know, they try to stand in front of the light. Anyway, listen, this has been Beyond with... this has been Ever Beyond with Nancy Hopkins and my personal self. We will be back in a few minutes with Frank Jordan and the Earthmind Think Tank Group. Thank you so much for appearing, Nancy.
Thank you, Jay. Always fun.
Bless your heart. Thank you for being my co-producer, my prompter and muse and second brain cell of the day. I feel like I've only had one brain cell firing on one. But the ibuprofen has really cut in now, and that's why I'm sounding happy. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. This has been Ever Beyond.
Love you much.
Thank you.